The crisis in the Middle East has deep roots. In the next few minutes, we're going to try to trace them. Now, it's bound to feel like cliff notes, but we're hearing from listeners an outline of some sort is needed. And it's bound to have critics because this fraught history is viewed differently by both sides. But simply put, both Jews and Arabs have been in this region for millennia, governed at different times by empires, the last the Ottoman. In the late 1800s, Jews started a Zionist movement, a move for a Jewish state in response to rising anti-Semitism. In 1917, the British defeated the Ottoman Empire in what was then called Palestine and occupied the area, enacting the British Mandate, a dual obligation to both the Arab and Jewish populations, endorsed by the League of Nations, to create homelands. The subsequent Balfour Declaration pledged to create a Jewish state, but an agreement could never be hammered out. In 1947, the mandate ended. In 1948, the Jews declared the State of Israel. A coalition of Arab states and Palestinians declared war. Arabs poured out of the area or were forcibly removed. Jews from other Middle East countries and survivors of the Holocaust poured in. And in what many saw as a miracle, Israel, the size of New Jersey, aided by allies like the U.S., fought them off. Well, there would be violent spasms for decades. In the 1967 Six-Day War, Israel battled Egypt and Jordan and emerged with control of the Gaza Strip, the Sinai Peninsula, the West Bank, the Golan Heights, Arab East Jerusalem. Thousands of Palestinians were displaced or came under Israeli occupation. In 1973, Egypt's Anwar Sadat led the bloody Yom Kippur War, which Israel only narrowly won. Over the years, the Palestinians split between the militant group Hamas in Gaza, the more moderate PLO in the West Bank. Israel characterized Palestinian uprisings in recent years as terrorist attacks. Palestinians say they're living under apartheid. Well, the next several decades also saw many attempts at peace. Aaron David Miller was involved in those efforts as an advisor to the State Department. Today, he's a senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. So, Aaron, have I got that outline right?
You know, Robin, in a minute and a half or two, it's actually a rather condensed and pretty good summary, keeping in mind that the highways and the byways are going to be interpreted by different sides in different ways. And the real sad thing here is both sides tend to interpret the conflict as a morality play, the forces of goodness on one hand versus the forces of darkness on the other, when in reality, I think Goethe had it right when he defined tragedy as a conflict of competing justices. And in this case, each side really does have competing needs that now seem to be almost impossible to reconcile. But yes, I think it's a good summary.
It's about right. Well, when you mention that the morality aspect of this, the founding of Israel happened at a time when there was huge understandable sympathy in the world. The Jews had almost been exterminated by the Nazis when other countries, you know, welcomed Israel as a state. We mentioned one of the major mileposts, the Six-Day War between Israel and primarily Egypt in 1967. As we said, Israel gains new territory, the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, the Golan Heights, East Jerusalem. Can you draw a direct line to the conflict today from the results of this war? The Israelis saying, it was a war, we won. You take land when you win in a war. And Arabs, Palestinians saying this was, again, a land grab of land belonging to the Palestinians.
1967 created more breathing space to the Israelis in response to what they perceived to be an existential threat from the Egyptians and the Syrians. But the reality is it also created a problem. It created what still dogs and frankly drives the Israeli-Palestinian issue, and that's the proximity problem. But it also created an incentive on both sides as the years passed to explore the possibilities for peace agreements. And the war that truly created the modern version, successful and unsuccessful, of the peace process was the 1973 war. At that point, Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger, eager to diminish Soviet influence in the region and to demonstrate that the United States could play an effective role, Kissinger started on his rather extraordinary journey of 18 months, three disengagement agreements. Those disengagement agreements would lay the basis for the next milestone, which was the transformative one. Anwar Sadat, never believing, I think, that he could actually militarily vanquish Israel, ended up committing himself to visit Jerusalem in November 1977, and there began a pathway that would lead to a fundamental breakthrough and to some degree a transformative one between Egypt and Israel. Jimmy Carter, in September of 1978, he convened the parties at a 12-day summit at Camp David, where they hammered out a couple frameworks, one to govern what might happen to the West Bank, fraught and never fulfilled, but grounds for an Egyptian-Israeli peace treaty, which would ultimately be signed on the White House lawn in March of 1979.
Just to sum up what you've said, this is Egyptian President Anwar Sadat, Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin, brought to Camp David by American President Jimmy Carter, and he did announce the peace deal, the Camp David Accords, peace between Israel and Egypt. Let's listen.
The world prayed for the success of our efforts, and I am glad to announce to you that these prayers have been answered.
But Aaron David Miller, the Palestinians weren't part of that deal. Was there a fatal flaw here? Why are we where we are?
The Israelis, Menachem Begin, I believe, made that deal not just to make peace with the largest and most powerful Arab state, but Begin made that deal because I think he saw another quid pro quo, that he would, in fact, trade Sinai for peace with Egypt. But it was an effort to maintain Israeli control over the West Bank and, of course, over Jerusalem. The Palestinian issue from the Israeli point of view remained fraught. It wasn't a problem to be solved between two states. It was to be solved between a state and a national movement, violent at the time, seeking to become a state. And it drove home to both parties both the incentives of proximity. Their pasts, their presents, and their futures were inextricably linked together. But the proximity problem also created one of the great constraints. Two peoples inextricably linked, living kilometers away from one another. One is occupier, one is occupied.
Well, 1987 brings the first intifada or uprising. These are deadly clashes in Israel, Gaza, the West Bank. This is, again, where Palestinians begin to be painted as terrorists, as you said. This is a group of people that feels occupied, has no sense of justice that the Palestinian state they've been promised was ever going to come to fruition. They wanted part of Israel as their capital of this state. They wanted the right of Palestinians to return. And that, in and of itself, completely erases the notion of a Jewish state, Israel. So that is unacceptable. Bill Clinton steps in with Israel and the PLO, the Palestine Liberation Organization, the now political leaders. They signed the Oslo Accords in 1993, but cannot get past the stumbling blocks of who has the right to Jerusalem, who has the right to the West Bank. Israel begins building settlements in this Palestinian territory. Is there any chance to get past that basic impasse?
Camp David, July 2000, Ehud Barak, Yasser Arafat, Bill Clinton. A summit convened, and I was one of the dozen or so Americans there with the best of intentions. But the reality is that the gaps on the core issues, Jerusalem, borders, security, refugees, were Grand Canyon-like in character. The summit did not succeed. It ushered in a period of sustained violence, the Second Intifada and terror, from which I would argue to you, Robin, that the Israeli-Palestinian relationship has still not, 20 years later, recovered. And if you ask me, can I envision an Israeli prime minister and a Palestinian president standing before their respective bodies and saying to each other, we still have to make peace with one another, but we hereby declare that our conflict is over? I cannot imagine that statement being made today or for the foreseeable future. I haven't given up hope, but most of my illusions that drove me during those years are gone, and the current crisis has only deepened, in my judgment, the sense of mistrust, the toxicity of politics on both sides. But I cannot see any pathway forward to address the comprehensive question that you posed at the beginning of this segment. Can Israelis and Palestinians end their conflict? The answer right now is a resounding no.
Aaron David Miller, Senior Fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Aaron, dispiriting, but we thank you for your expertise. Thank you.
Robin, thank you.